Okay, so we were discussing Bichdei Sheya'asu. So the Gemara said that if a guy brings something for a Jew, so it becomes mutter Bichdei Sheya'asu. And we saw that there are several major machlokot Rishonim about this. The first one is the machlokas Rash. Let's call it Rashi Tosfos. It's not really Rashi Tosfos. It's also Rashi Tosfos. Rashi quotes this as already a machlokas in his time, and even before the he brings in the Kalanamites, and he brings in Rabbeinu Gershom. Everyone was in on this machlokas. The first question was, when we say that which a goy brought for you, or when a goy performs malacha for a Jew, it's not only prohibited until the end of Yantif, it's usur until the end of Yantif, plus the amount of time it would take you to perform the malacha that was done, which allowed you to have access to this object. So Rashi and Tosfos argue, does that mean the end of Yom Tov Rishon or Yom Tov Sheni? Now Rashi contends that it means Yom Tov Rishon, that you're allowed to eat it already in Yom Tov Sheni, and he says it's very simple. Formally speaking, the prohibition here is to not benefit from that which a goy did for you on Yom Tov until Chol. Now, if the first day was Yom Tov, then the second day is now Chol. If the first day was Chol, so then there's nothing to speak about, and it was permitted to begin with.
But the goy can bring you something on Chol.
What? Because a goy can bring you something on Chol, just like you could bring yourself something on Chol. And therefore, he says, you have to wait the amount of time it would take to theoretically do the malacha on the second day of Yontif, even though you can't, it doesn't matter. It's a formal question, right? Tosfos says, no, this isn't a formal question. This is a kanas question. We want to dissuade you from asking non-Jews to do work for you. The way we do that is by telling you, you can't benefit from the work of the non-Jew. In order to make it that you actually don't benefit, it has to be not with fancy lumdus, you could say, well, technically I didn't benefit from the non-Jew. No. Could you or could you not have performed this act? Yes, no. If the answer is no, for whatever reason, Safek, Vada, Yom Tov Rishon, Sheni, who cares? The point is that if we allow you to benefit from it on the second day of Yontif, you will now be encouraged to ask non-Jews to do things for you on Yom Tov because you will gain 24 hours out of it.
So it has to be more chomer than asking a Jew to do something for you.
Hold that thought. We'll get to that. That's what we're going to get to today. You said that last week, and we're going to get to that. We're going to get to that. Okay? We're going to get there.
And the first day of Yom Tov was Shabbos.
What?
I think the first day of Yom Tov was Shabbos.
Same thing. You have to wait till the end of the second day.
According to Rashi.
What?
According to Rashi, you would also have to wait.
According to Rashi, yeah. According to Rashi, presumably, then you'd have to wait according to the second day Yom Tov, right? Because Shabbos and Yom Tov are both Vada. Yeah, so Shabbos and then a Sunday Yom Tov, you'd have to wait. Was that knock at the door? I think it was knocking. I think so. Okay, now, so what is the machlokes between them? So we noted from this, whoever it was, in the Or HaMizrach, the truth is I should have checked, because I actually have a whole set now of the Or HaMizrach. I have, since I've gone to Toronto, I've been giving so many random svarim, but one of the things I have now, I've been given is a full set of the Or HaMizrach, another is the full set of Jewish Action, another is the whole set of Jewish Life. So, all types of interesting things in my house now.
Is there published Or HaMizrach?
I don't know, but it's...
Jew Observer not.
What?
Jewish Observer not.
Well, fascinating stuff going on in my apartment right now. So anyways, in Lamed Dalet, I'll have to check at home who this was, suggests that perhaps this is Rashi and Tosfos, according to their own Chitos, that Rashi thinks that Amir Lenachri is about Shlichus, and therefore, the problem here is that it's as if the Jew did it, and therefore we apply the same, it's a formal question. Did something actually happen, and then you have to wait with Leisha Yase? According to Tosfos, the problem of Nir Lanachri is we don't want you to ask a guy. If we don't want you to ask a guy, so we have to dissuade you for as long as it... Right? Sorry, we don't want you to ask a guy, because then you might do it yourself. So in order to prevent you from asking a guy, which might lead to do it yourself, we have to wait till you yourself can actually do it. It's not a formal question, it's a practical question. How do we best dissuade you? We saw another nafkamina of this question, besides this nafkamina itself, is what the Rashba notes in 6, which is when we say you have to wait, how much time do you have to wait? Do you have to wait the amount of time it takes theoretically to perform the malacha, or practically it would take you to actually access this apple? Right? Meaning, it takes 30 seconds to pick an apple off a tree. Does that mean after Yom Tov you have to wait 30 seconds? Or does it mean the closest apple orchard is a mile away, so I have to wait 20 minutes to walk the mile plus 30 seconds to pick it, and I can only eat the apple 20 minutes, 21 minutes after nightfall? Again, do I take a formal approach? Right? How much time does it take for me not to be considered benefiting from malacha? Or practically, at what point do I no longer gain from having asked the guy to do it? Okay. That's the Rajah's position himself. Though he does quote in 7, he quotes from the Chachmei Lunel, that Udvarm She'enem B'minam B'mechubar Shavuvali Yisrael Zeh B'yom Rishon Shal Rosh Hashanah Kazu B'sefer HaMa'or. And so now he has this Shaila, right? When it's, if it was prepared, that something that isn't, you know, attached to the ground, this is Tchumen question, right? So the Rajah then, you know, the Gemara had talked about two things, malacha and then what, you know, tchum shaylas. So he said, if something is no longer b'mechubar, meaning if he's bringing you an apple, all the apples have been picked. So now the only potential problem is tchum. It's not malacha anymore. So then he quotes, the kazu b'sefer ha-ma'or, shenish la-sheila b'fnei chachmei lunel, right? So he quotes the Baal HaMor. Now the Baal HaMor is from Provence.
Reb
Zrachi Halevi. And, right, the reason he calls... Right, historical. I think I mentioned this before, but why is the sefer called? It's two svarim. Right, the sefer hamaor is divided into two sections: the maor hagadol and maor hakatan. Maor hagadol is on Nashim Nezikin, maor hakatan on Moed. Why is it called maor hagadol and maor hakatan? Because he's from Provence, and the two major cities are Lunel, which is the sun, the maor hagadol, and the small one. The moon. And the other one is Narbon, which is the sun, which is the Mar HaGadol. So Mar HaGadol, Mar HaKatan, right. Hence the Sefer HaMa'or. And he is Provençal, and he quotes, I'm sure his name is like that as well, right? Zerachia, I assume his parents were like, you know, that's what it is, right? It's all, everyone's into the sun, moon names in Provence. They're into these light things. I mean, think about them, all of them, right? Menachem, Lemishbachat, Meiri, right? They're all into light names. What?
The sun a couple of centuries later, the sun came.
Yeah, exactly. Anyways, but he quotes from the Baal HaMor, quoting the Chachmei Lunel, Veshivo shemutar biyom tov sheni lefei she'en alav shum isra achana velo isra toli b'kdusha k'dei she'ne'amar k'shnei yamim k'dusha achar hein k'dusha rechtahi elakein k'nasi k'zeirah shebiyom lo lahavi v'dayush k'nasa alav v'rishon v'hu adin l'shabas biyom tov. He quotes the Chachmei Lunel as saying something totally different and saying, no, until now we've said maybe the question here is... is it about dissuading, not dissuading? He said, look, it's a very practical question. Everyone agrees it's just a kenas. The question is, how much do you want to be konis him? And the answer is, not so much. They said it becomes mutter after the first day. Why? Because it's a kenas. You're right. You could have said the kenas should be till the second day, because that'll really get you and that'll really dissuade you. But you could just say this is a very technical machlokas. It's just everyone agrees it's a kenas, and the question is, how machmir are we the kenas? He says, look, it's not kedusha rechta, it's not one long day, it's really two separate days, and so, like, there's a difference between Yom Tov Rishon and Yom Tov Sheni, so, okay, we're machmir one day. Why? Right? It's, you know, before this we've suggested a fundamental machlokas, Rashi and Tosfos. The Rashba will remind you, sometimes it's not fundamental. I know, I hate saying this as a brisker, right? But sometimes. Sometimes it's just balabatish. Not in a bad way. Sometimes it's just like, okay, how much are we going to punish people? A little bit, a lot of it, right? Okay, you know, why did they argue? Well, I don't know. Their intuition was that it was a lot, theirs was a little, and move on. You know, okay, fine.
I don't know if you maybe missed an answer, but I did listen. Is it different between the rice and the rabbanon in terms of this? In other words, you talked about fruit, let's say fruits on the ground, which is only a rabbanon.
Right, so far we've dealt with d'oraisa, presumably.
Right.
The rabbanon presumably is more mekel, because we'll see already. Tchumen might be
that's
somewhat more mekel. Right, so that is actually a continuation of the Gemara.
Okay.
But we'll see the distinction we'll see the distinction in a second.
I mean, the same thing Yom Tov is derived, so
I mean, it is, but yes, but it might be right. A malacha done in derabanan might be different than violating a derabanan. Yes, but no, it was done on the first day Yontif, right? Meaning, it's
no,
the
part to Rashi.
No, no, yeah, but it's done on the first day Yontif. It's just that you can't benefit. No, no, but the Isser done was Daraisa because it was on the first day, right? It was an Isser Daraisa done on the first day. You're right. By the time you get to Yom Tov Sheni, it's Darabanan, but the Isser was Daraisa. Okay. The Shidduchim Betzet tells you, I don't want to get to the whole thing, but the Shidduchim Betzet just takes the position, he actually proves this from, is it worth doing? Okay, you know, let's read it. No, let's read it inside. Kazav Mori Neru, the pair shalikdan miyom tovo b'shabes b'shvil yisrov v'lo aviyena ela ad shetechshach tzarech kdei sheyasu, right? If fruit were picked on Yom Tov or Shabbos for a Jew, and they weren't brought until nightfall, you still have to wait the amount of time it would take for you to pick it. He notes that this isn't only true if it's brought, or this is an important point, it's a practical point. It's not only if it's brought on Yom Tov, this is true after Yom Tov as well. Meaning, if you have to wait 20 minutes and they bring it to you 10 minutes after Yom Tov, you still have to wait another 10 minutes. That's the rule. Right? Because he picked it for you on Yom Tov, so you still have to wait the amount of time after Yom Tov, whatever that is. Kedar Garcinan, and then his proof is from the second paragraph of Machshirin. Matzah Bayerek Nimkar, and he's, if you find vegetables sold, Imrov Nachrim Lokech Miyad, if most of the city is non-Jews, so then you're allowed to buy it immediately because it's presumed that it was done for non-Jews. Perish Devada Elas Nachrim Nilkadu, because it's assumed that it was definitely for non-Jews. Imrov Yisrael Mamtin Achiyavo Mimakom Karov. But if it's for Jews, you have to wait the amount of time that Mimakom Karov. So at least in Ches of Truman, he assumes it's not the amount of time it takes to get it, it's the amount of time it takes to theoretically get it, right? Meaning the closest possible place, right? He holds you don't have to wait, right? If it's 5 miles away, you still don't have to wait the amount of time to get 5 miles. It's how much it would take to get in from the from outside the Trum. But that's what he just points out, that this is also... Right, this is true after Yom Tov and Shabbos, not only on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Now, part of this discussion, though, and this is what Alan keeps getting to, but now we'll get to it, is this is all true of a non-Jew. What happens if a Jew, the Isser, either Shogeg, Mezid, whatever, we'll see in a moment, violates an Isser on Shabbos and performs Malacha? Once it's done, are you allowed to benefit or not? So this is a three-way machlokas in the Gemara. Gemara number 9 tells you, Alam Ravashi, Rehudid Mevashel he Ditnan, Hamevashel b'Shabbos, if you cook on Shabbos, b'Shogeg yochal, b'Mezid lo yochal. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says, the halacha is that if you cook on Shabbos, if it is on purpose, you can't eat it on Shabbos. If it's by accident, you're allowed to eat the food even on Shabbos. That's Rabbi Meir's position. He's the most makel. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, b'shogeg yochal b'motzai Shabbos. If it was by accident, so you have to wait till after Shabbos. B'mezid lo yochal olamis. If you cooked on Shabbos on purpose, you can never eat that food forever. Rabbi Yochanan Asandler Omer, Rabbi Yochanan Asandler says, b'shogeg yochal motzai Shabbos lachirim lolo. If it was accidental, it's still usher for you forever. But it's mutter for other people after Shabbos. B'mezid lo yochal olamis lo lo v'lo lachirim. If it's on purpose, you and everybody else, it's usher forever, period, end of story, we're done. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's say you're cooking for a sick person.
So if it's... That, I believe I put... I'm pretty sure I put the sources on that, or I took it out for space, but if I took it out for space, then we'll get to it. But right now we're assuming Be'isser. Beheter will come too. Now, how do we paskin? So as we'll see, this is a machlokes. What?
Rabbi Meir, right?
So that's unclear. Shulchan Aruch paskins like Rabbi Yehuda. The Balei HaTosvos paskin like Rabbi Meir. And the Gra paskins like the Balei HaTosvos. And the Mishnah Berurah says, B'shas HaTchak, you can rely on the Gra, following Balei HaTosvos, following Rabbi Meir, which is more Lakula, which, hold the thought, because I did put that halach, it's here.
When Rabbi Meir says, Mezid lo yochal, what does he mean by that?
Till after Shabbos.
Till after Shabbos.
It means after Shabbos.
Till after Shabbos, correct.
Everybody else says, everybody else points out,
Right, lo yochal means on Shabbos. Right, Rav Meir is the most meikil. Right, so let's just right. Rav Meir is the most meikil. He says, if it's accidental, everyone can eat it immediately. If it's intentional, so he can't eat it on Shabbos, but he can after Shabbos, and but other people can still eat it on Shabbos. Rabbi Yehuda says, b'shogeg, he can eat it motzai Shabbos. B'mezid, he can't.
But others can,
right? But not, right? B'mezid, they can eat it, but still only after Shabbos. Rabbi Yochanan Sandler says, b'shogeg, no one can ever eat it on Shabbos. The only question is until, is what happens after Shabbos. Now, here's the question. According to Rav Meir, this is not a shaila, but every time someone says you can eat it motzei Shabbos, or you can, other people can, what do they mean? Right? After Shabbos immediately, or after Shabbos b'chdei sheyasu? Right? I mean, there's a two-level machlokas, right? First is, which way do you paskin in the Gemara? Right. But then, every time someone says motzei Shabbos, what do they mean? Motzei Shabbos immediately, or motzei Shabbos b'chdei sheyasu? So Rashi says, b'chdei sheyasu. Right, yochel hu atzma uvo vayom ein tzarech lahamtin ad erev b'chdei sheyasu. Right, he says throughout the sugya. Rabbi Meir says you can eat it on Shabbos. And you don't have to wait till motzei Shabbos. And what does motzei Shabbos mean? Motzei Shabbos b'chdei sheyasu. I mean, just like by a non-Jew, you have to wait. By a Jew, you have to wait also.
So it's a knas, basically.
Ah, so it seems like it's not just a knas, it's... Yeah. Right? This is what we said before from Rashi. Right? Right. And this is what they said in the Or HaMizrach. Rashi holds that B'chdei Sheyasu is necessary both for Malacha that a Jew did on Yom Tov,
right,
or Shabbos, and Malacha that a non-Jew did on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Which works L'shitaso, because Rashi thinks that Amir L'Nachri is Asur for Shlichus, right, meaning it's as if you did it. So therefore, it makes sense that whatever is true for you is true for the guy. Whatever is true for the guy is true for you. Because the whole reason Amir L'Nachri is Osir is because it's if you did it. And therefore he learns from one to the other and equates them and says anything that's done by a Jew or by a guy through the shlichus of a Jew.
Therefore saying to a guy is a Rabbanan, cooking yourself is a Rabbanan.
Correct. But on the level of the Rabbanan, right? It's shlichus l'chumran at the Rabbanan. But still... Right, he says we treat it as if you did it.
That's not exactly equal.
Correct. It's correct, but this is clearly a derabbanan institution.
Right.
But Rashi says we treat them the same because conceptually they're the same, and the point is you aren't allowed to benefit from malacha done on Shabbos or Yom Tov by a Jew writ large, which means Jew, non-Jew on behalf of Jew. Right? All that, according to Rashi, is one big continuum.
Is there a difference between?
I'm just being practical on this. I don't think we apply it, but let's say at Sobeys, where they get their deliveries of fruit and vegetables on Shabbat or on Yom Tov, based on this, we actually can't shop there and buy that produce right after Shabbat or Yom Tov. Because it's brought in for Jews, Sobeys is basically for Jews.
It's an interesting question how you define Vimakam Sharov, Nachrem Rov, you know, gets... I'm sure the COR has figured out their policy.
Okay.
You know, they're nothing if not thorough on these things. It's an interesting experiment. We should email them, right? And ask them what, right, is Sobeys considered a place which is Makom Sharov Yisrael? Such that,
slowly.
Not on Shabbos. Well,
I mean, for all I know, they have policies that like
more non-kosher stuff also in certain corners than they've had before.
Which is fine. For all I know, they don't have deliveries on Shabbos. For all I know, right? I have no clue, right? You know, Yes, exactly. Yeah, I don't know. And look, for all I have no idea. Honestly, it'd be an interesting experiment. We can email. Look, I can email. Rabbi Heber. He is very helpful. Rabbi Heber is very helpful. Whenever I email him, he is very helpful. He gets back to me, tells me the COR policy. He sent me his book. He wrote up a Sefer. I didn't know he had a Sefer. He came out with a Sefer in the fall, which has a lot of their shilas, and he wrote excellent tshuvot on it. Like, he's very thorough. I really like him. And you find out what's going on. It's true that when I write, I do get more of an answer. I know. Like, when I text the COR... You know the text the COR shilas. You know, have you ever used it? COR has like an ask the rabbi thing. So like, usually when you text them, you get yes, no, whatever.
Unless you ask why we don't have kosher chicken.
By the text. Anyways, well,
they are.
Okay. Big secret. The person who answers those is right, David Rosen, who's like from the Kollel. So I started at some point signing my texts, right? And then, right, I sort of sent a yes, no answer. Then I followed it up with a question, signed my name. And then he's like, oh, I didn't realize who it was. And he sent me a whole explanation. When you're like a rabbi, you get a,
Don't you know that old legal dictum? Never ask a rabbi a question you don't know the answer to.
But Rabbi Heber is, both of them are great. They get, they really, if you, at least when I ask them, I get good answers. You know, I don't know. Look, email them, email the OU, the Weber Rabbi is very helpful.
Identify yourself. You get long answers. It's true.
Yeah, for sure. Right. Sometimes Ora has texted, gotten a yes, no, and I'll follow up and say, my wife texted you, but I don't understand the answer. And then I'll say, well, he's like, it's Usser. Then I sent him back, why is it Usser? Oh, I'm not sure it's Usser. I can't say it's Mutter, so I have to say it's Usser. I'm like, I get that. I understand that you do that. I get it. But if I'm texting, I'll get the full answer. Anyways, fine.
Okay.
Anyways,
I understand.
Good time.
Is there a difference between in this situation if the Jew is cooking for himself or if the Jew is cooking for you, who's going to eat? Like if he's eating, just does it matter? Is there not?
Yeah, it might matter. Let's assume for the moment he's cooking for himself. Because if he's cooking for you, it's worse, right? Because then the other people can't do it. We're talking here. He's cooking for himself. If he's cooking for you, then it's even worse, right? Then you're equated with him. Correct. If a Jew cooks for you, then presumably it's like you. But so Rashi though equates this. Yeah, Alan.
Just out of curiosity, I don't belabor this, but why would you have to wait if it's a shogeg?
Because you're still violated on Shabbos, right? That's still bad.
But it's still a shogeg.
Yeah, but it's bad. You have to bring a karban. It's bad. It's innocent, right? Like, right? The way the Rambam says in Perek Hei Alachavav Hilchoshkagos that the reason you bring a karban is ilu badak yafe yafe, right? If you had been careful, you wouldn't have sinned. Meaning, according to the Rambam, this is not true for the Ramban, but according to the Rambam, shogeg is on the same continuum as mazid. Mazid, you're punished for being rebellious. Shogeg, you're punished for being flippant.
I can understand that with the guy with the ladder who drops it on somebody,
On Shabbos it's true also. Omer Mutter, any of those. The Rambam's position is that shogeg, anytime we call it shogeg, it's because you are flippant, right? You weren't careful enough, and therefore you are guilty, right? It's the difference in law between meaning it's shogeg is basically mazid is intentional, right? Is premeditated. Shogeg is negligence. Poshea is gross negligence. Right, we have a spectrum. Shogeg is not an accident. It's negligence.
Wasn't there a distinction between I know what the halacha is?
Omer Mutter is. So we're going to come to that, but Omer Mutter is assumed to be shogeg also. They're both shogeg.
Isn't that the classic shogeg?
I mean, we paskin. It's machlokes, munbaz, and Rabbi Kiva, but we paskin that Omer Mutter is equivalent to shogeg, except in murder. Mm-hmm. Right? In murder, Omer Mutter is either better or worse. Right, it's machlokes abaye in Rava in Makos Dav Zayin and Beis. Right, is Omer Mutter by murder onus, karav onus, or karav lemezid? Everywhere else, it's Omer Mutter a shogeg. Why? Shear for another time. That was the first shear I gave when I came back from Shana Aleph. Was at my parents' shul. Was why is shogeg bad? Right, why are accidents bad? Right, and I quoted Rilchum Sin at the time. The Rambam says it's because it's in the same continuum as Mezid. The Ramban says no, Afal Pisha Ratzvei Hashemu. It's because you really are not culpable, but sin creates a metaphysical blemish in your soul, which you have to contend with. Story for another time. But it is fascinating. It was one of Rilchum Sin's things I'd heard from him several times, and then it was published in his Hurio Sefer.
Right.
Anyways, so Rashi, after all that, says yeah, Kdeshi Asu is in both. Tosfos says, what are you talking about? Tosfos says 11. Upeir shekontrus. The time of the Rishim Kadesh Yasu Kadesh Lehenem Melechas Yom Tov. Rem Mevashol B'Shabbos B'Shogeg Yochal Afa Gav Dinen Melechas Shabbos Umir Yesh Lomer De'inena Kol Kach Kemet Lav Bishol Roy Lekos Blah Blah Blah. But then he ends up saying, right, he says, Avakasha Mishochet B'Shabbos B'Shogeg Di Yochal Ar Meir Hecha D'Hayel Ocholim Yom Ved Yom V'Hivri K'damrin B'Samoch M'Shem D'Lavim Mo'tzav L'Oser Tam. See, okay, I'm not going to give all his cases. We'll come back to them. But he just Tosfos says it's not true. Why? He says the end. V'yesh lomar, for a very, again, a technical reason. Milzat lo shchicha l'gazu be'rabanan. Right? You're right. Logically, a Jew performing malacha on Shabbos is worse than a non-Jew performing malacha on Shabbos for you. Elamai, Jews who keep Shabbos don't normally break Shabbos. And therefore, if they do, it's rare. And the rule is we don't make zerot for rare things. Milzat lo shchicha l'gazu be'rabanan. And therefore, Tosfos says, too bad. Right? You're right. It's worse, but ironically, right? You could have framed it differently, right? Daraisa lo tzara chizuk.
Today,
right?
Or go to people's houses and are from and...
In a chanami, but the point is, once they weren't gozer, they weren't gozer, but no. So what's the big shayla today? I'm jumping the gun, but we'll get there in a minute. I put it there, even though it's not really our sugya, but it's the most important. The most important nafkamina of all this is not the sobi shayla. The most important nafkamina to this question is not Omer Mutter, but if someone holds it like a different shita than you, is that considered shogig from your vantage point such that if you paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, you can't eat their food on Shabbos, right? That is when this comes up most often, right? Is what if someone is not doing a bisser, someone's doing it based on another shita? What's the halacha? This was, I wrote an article on this my second year in YU. I didn't torture you with my whole article, but I put the basic sources. Dafka, not the sources I rely on, but the sources that the classic shita are sort of presented like. Okay.
But there's a question of why you have to wait for the Shabbos first, why not for a Jew?
What?
That's what you were answering here.
No, I was here, yes.
The Shabbos for
this correct, correct. Right, Tosfos disagrees with Rashi, and he says, very simple, what?
He says you don't have to wait.
You don't have to wait, right. Because he says, because it's rare. There's a formal. No, even by Mezid. Meaning, that's the three of Machlokas in the Gemara. But he said, every time they say you're allowed to eat Motzei Shabbos, they mean Motzei Shabbos Miyad.
He doesn't make a distinction between shogeg and mezid.
No, that's the three machlokas in the Gemara. That's what I said. There's two levels of machlokas. It's every time someone... Now, obviously, when they say olamis, they mean olamis. When they say the Motzei Shabbos, he says Motzei Shabbos means miyad. Why doesn't Motzei Shabbos mean b'chshei sheyasu? Because it says milsot lo shchicha. It's not common. If it's not common, we don't make zero. Yes, right?
Formal. Another answer. Maybe there were machmir by a goy much more than by a Jew.
And that's the Piskei Arid, right? Piskei Arid says what Sam said. The Rid says it's not just a formality that things that don't happen a lot we aren't gozer. It's much more mistaber. It's people don't take Amir Lanachmi seriously, so we need to bend over backwards to make you take it seriously. People do take Shabbos seriously, and therefore we don't have to, for the odd man out who's going to violate Shabbos, that's what the Rid says, we don't have to make a gzera. Yesh lomar, devadim leches goy, gozer rav lahamtin vichle sheyasu, gzera shema yomar lo lasos b'Shabbos. By a goy, we have to make a gzera and make you wait after Shabbos, because otherwise you might ask a goy. V'amir l'goy shvus, u'shvus d'rabanan kille. Because in the end of the day, asking a goy to perform malacha is only d'rabanan, therefore people treat it leniently. But if a Jew happens to violate Shabbos on purpose, we're not worried that Jews are going to violate Shabbos. And therefore, for the odd person who does, we don't have to make a gzera. Right? And we see this a lot in Shas. The more makel something is, the more likely people are to violate it. And therefore, the more we have to protect it. The more machmer something is, the less likely people are to violate it. So even if they do, we don't have to set up safeguards, right? It's basically, if someone's not afraid of the death penalty, right, adding a level of derabanan that he has to wait an extra 20 minutes after Shabbos is not helping, right?
That's only going to be a mayor thing.
Well, anybody who says Motzei Shabbos, right? Obviously, anyone who says Olamis, Olamis means Olamis. Correct, right? This is
harder than a goy.
No, correct. Each of these you have to map. Now, the reason, we're going to leave Rabbi Yochanan Sandler out. The reason Rabbi Yochanan Sandler is so machir is because he thinks the Isser of Maisa Shabbos is biblical, is Daraisa. And that's why Rabbi Yochanan Sandler is different. Rameir and Rehuda both agree it's Derabanan, so we're still talking in the same language. Rabbi Yochanan Sandler is a shir for another time. He thinks it's Derabanan.
This is only according to Rameir. This whole thing is only according to
Rameir. This is according to Rameir, no, and Rabbi Yehuda.
Not Rabbi Yehuda, because he says, I love us.
No, that's only by Mezid. That's my Mezid. But by Shozig, he says Motzei Shabbos.
It's still
Mezid. No, but meaning, like I said, every time it says Motzei Shabbos. No, I know. But it says, it's every time something is Motzei Shabbos. Yes, a Goy can do it, but Mezid. Obviously, the Goy case is always Mezid, right? There are distinctions.
No, but he's also, he could be doing it for you, specifically. So that's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. So right. No, in a chanami.
Mazed by himself. It doesn't
have but he's doing
in a chanami, but it's a different. Mazed there means something slightly different. Right. Obviously, they're not totally mappable.
We're comparing it to. But, for,
correct. We're definitely
comparing them to a Jew.
We're comparing it. They're similar in certain senses. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Sort of. Okay. Now, how do we paskin? So this is what I mentioned in 13. So first of all, how do we paskin on the two questions? B'gdei sheyasu and Remeir versus Rabbi Yehuda, the Beis Yosef, right? So Mashakasa Rabbeinu ain't tzarich lamdim b'chdei sheyasu. So the Torah paskins like Tosfos that we don't wait b'chdei sheyasu. King Kasev Rambam Kasev Rabbi Mishnah Shekain Dasa Rabbeinu Yona. B'time it lo mitzrachin b'chdei sheyasu b'davar sheino nasa yidei Yisrael misha mitoch shekal beinav yavo lasos came pa macheres aval davar shos Yisrael biadayim vade lekal mechas jisharis leim miyad asi levashul lehedya. Right, the Beis Yosef follows the Tosfos Rid. That Sam likes, that the reason why Jews performing malacha were more lenient right. is because we're not worried that Jews are going to violate Shabbos, we're only worried that we're going to have a goy do it. Lafuki mi Rashi, unlike Rashi, dachanami matzor chebi deshiyasu, because of a Rajba, the perikama de chulin, umiyul kuleyama mivasha lachola b'Shabbos. This is Morris's point. This is only when you do it be'isr, when you do it forbidden. But let's say you cooked on Shabbos beheter, right, for someone who was sick, pikuach nefesh, and it was permitted. So then what's the halacha? O shekatzis lo delat, or you cut a vegetable for someone who was sick. Then mutter labari b'matzai Shabbos miyad, delobin and mikle sheyasu. So you still can't eat it on Shabbos. We don't let you eat it on Shabbos because we're worried, shema marbe, you might add. But motzai Shabbos, you don't have to wait. The only time anyone says you have to wait is Ela Kishin Eschal Shabbos Obishogigo B'mezid. When Shabbos is violated, whether it's accident or not accident, as the Machlokes are Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, Aval Kancha Asa B'Rishus Sheino Asar Lebari Ela Mishom Mukta Mishom Gzeri Shemayar B'Shvilo. But when it was cooked Beheter, the reason we don't allow a Jew to eat it, a healthy Jew to eat it on Shabbos, for one of two reasons. Either it's Mukta, because you didn't plan on having new cooked food on Shabbos, or because we're worried that if we allow the Jew to eat, he'll add more soup to the pot for himself. So on Shabbos, we don't let you do it. But there was no Isser, and when there's no Isser, everyone agrees, lo b'inim v'chdei she'asu, so then at Motzei Shabbos, it is permitted. Okay. What I gave you from here to the end is halacha l'maisa.
So you're dealing with the goy situation.
What?
You're just dealing with
no, this is the Jew situation.
Yeah.
Correct. Now, how do we paskin? So that's the rest of the sources here. So the halacha, as we follow Shulchan Aruch, as I said, paskins like Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, that Hamavash al b'Shabbos, osh also achas mishar melachos b'mezid aser lo leolam ulachirim mutter l'motzoi Shabbos miyad. Right, like Rabbi Yehuda, that if it's intentional, it's aser for you forever, and other people, it's mutter l'motzoi Shabbos u'vishoge miyad. Right, so it's Rabbi Yehuda, as interpreted by Tosfos and the Rambam, right? Meaning, immediately after Shabbos, not b'chdei she'yaseh, u'v'shogeg aser bo b'yom gam achirim, on shogeg it's aser for everybody that day, u'le'erev mutter gam lo miyad, but motzei Shabbos is mutter for him and for everybody else immediately, v'im amar le'inu yehudi lazuz lo malacha, we'll see. Now, Gerard's point, what about Dirabbanans? Right, so far we've talked about Dirabbanans. What about Dirabbanans? So the Mishnah Berurah in Gimel notes that this is very complicated, and to Machlokas Achronim, he says, Achas Mishar Melachos, the Im Hi Melacha Dirabbanan. What about Dirabbanan? Ein Bever Hagra, Sheherach Lochich, Dul Kulei Alma, Im Asa Osa Bishogig, Ein La'asor B'diavad Le'anot Mimena. The Gra rules that if it's Dirabbanan and it's Shogig, then it's Mutter Lechatchila. Right, that's the position of the Gra. And then he says, look in the Ber Halacha, where he has a bit more of a discussion on this. But that is the position of the Gra, that if it's Dirabbanan and it's Shogeg, so then it's Mutter, but if it's Dirabbanan and it's Mazid, then it's still Aser. Right? Because if you did it but Mazid, we still have to punish you. If it's Shogeg and it's Dirabbanan, then it's Kal enough. We don't punish you. We don't make you wait. But if it is b'mezid, then we do.
What do you mean by mutar? When we're saying that it's mutar in the deraita, going back to 14, can the person who made it sell it to someone else so they can eat it? Or when it says it's usher to him, it's usher both to eat and in hana'a?
Hmm. I don't know. I have to check. I don't know.
You would think,
but I have to check. I'm not sure. It's an interesting question. I'm not sure. I have to check that up. And then the Mishnah Berurah in 15 clarifies that miyad means vafilu misha misbashel bishvilo, even if it was cooked for you. This is coming back to Morris's point, right? This is when we say lachirim here uniquely, we mean achirim even, right? By a goy, it matters if they did it for you. By a Jew, it doesn't. By a Jew, it matters who did it, not who it was done for. And therefore, it's mutter immediately for others, even if it was done for them. Sorry, I made a mistake before. No. I said the opposite before. It's not true. That's only if you ask them. Right? If you are involved, it might be different. But if by a Jew, if you ask them, sorry, if you don't ask them, if they do it for you, you don't have to wait. Elbum loch al nasez al yidei eino yud bishvil yisrael mishum dekal be'einov iser damir lo ve'gilulim. The reason we have so many more chumros. If a non-Jew does it for you, it's aser. If a Jew does it for you, it's mutter. After Shabbos. After Shabbos.
Not during.
Right. After Shabbos. But presumably. But presumably, according to Rav Meir, it would be mutter for you on Shabbos, right?
Yeah.
This is within Rabbi Yehuda, within Shulchan Aruch Pasuk Rabbi Yehuda. And he says, again, why? Because we're more machmir by Amir Lanachri than we are by Jews, because, again...
Really, even Rav Meir would say it's mutter? That's
on
like,
Shabbos?
On Shabbos,
that's what it sounds like, right? That's, yeah. You know, you'd assume that's what it sounds like.
Wow, that would be scary.
Right? Because, he just goes on because we won't believe him.
Well, then it's the mechanism that he would answer it mukta, because...
Yeah, you might answer it from mukta on Yom Tov. You might answer it from mukta. I mean, there are other mechanisms we can deal with. But from this vantage point, it might, right, muksa it might still be.
That's why, yeah.
But not necessarily, because he thinks Beshogeg gets mutzered even to you. So I'm not sure Meir buys the muksa thing.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's why he doesn't buy, because
maybe.
If you were going to be Aser, right. It would be muksa.
Maybe. But Meir doesn't hold the muksa.
So
maybe it is mutzer.
They cook something with Beshogeg.
Right, so we haven't gotten there yet. So Shulchan Aruch Pasuk are Yehuda, right? So,
It actually sounds like he holds on Tosfot, what he's saying, next couple lines down.
Shulchan Aruch Pasuk Rabbi Yehuda. Shulchan Aruch Pasuk Rabbi Yehuda. Did I actually not put it? I think actually in the end I decided not to put this because it's too complicated. So let me say it quickly outside. I didn't put this because... I think because I wrote an article on it, I didn't put it because then I would get too caught up on it. But I should mention it, right? The biggest halacha l'maaseh thing here is how do you deal with a other shito, right? So the prima gadim, no, try that again. Mishnah Berurah quotes the prima gadim as saying that omer mutter is shogeg. But if someone has a legitimate shita, right? Omer mutter is, I think it's mutter, but it's not. But if it's a machlokes and someone else paskins differently, then that's less than omer mutter. And according to everyone, you would be allowed to eat it, right? If someone else prepared something based on his shita, you can eat it. That's the Mishnah Berurah. The problem is that the Aruch HaShabbos notes, the Prima Gadim doesn't say this. Right, the Mishnah Berurah quotes in the Prima Gadim. The Prima Gadim says the opposite and says that Omer Mutter, that someone else holding like a different shita is equivalent to Omer Mutter and it's shogeg. And therefore, if someone else follows a shita that you don't agree with, it should be usher
for you.
If you paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, it would be usher. And the truth is that, so when I read the article, it's not just the Prima Gadim. It's an explicit Ramban and a Meiri and a Gra, right? That we, based on the simple understanding of two Gemara Mefurashot, one on Shabbos Daf Kuftes and one on Shabbos Kuf Mem, that even by Nisr Derabanan, Omer Machlokes Aposkim, on Shabbos, we treat different Shitot as Omer Mutter, but not less. And therefore, according to Behuda, if someone cooks something for you, it's at least, right, it's considered Shogeg, which is Usser, until Motzai Shabbos. And therefore, if someone holds like a different shita, you shouldn't be allowed to eat their house on Shabbos. That's what should be Yotze. from this.
You just say, tell me waiting for the Malacha Malkin.
Exactly, I'm waiting right on Friday night. On Friday night. Or Shabbat, even Shabbos Day. So how do you deal with this? This would obviously create tremendous problems. So how do we deal with it? So there's two ways really of dealing with it. Lidati, the easiest way to deal with it is to say very simply, the Gra paskins like Rav Meir, like the Balei HaTosfos, in which case, Shogeg is considered, Omer Mutter is Shogeg, and Shogeg is Mutter l'achirim b'Shabbos, right? And therefore, it's not a problem, right? Because even if it is Shogeg, Shogeg is Mutter, right? That's the easiest way to get out of this, is just to say, we paskin like the Gra. And the Mishnah Brura says we pass on the Grav Shasatchak, and this is a Shasatchak, because otherwise you'd have to ask everybody all their shitas, right? And you could never eat by anybody unless you knew every single of their halachic shitas in every one of the malachas, right? Every bishul, derabanan shayla, and every lush and tochen, and, you know, forget it. In the article, I noted like another four ways of defending it, which is to say, you know, there are different achronic approaches, which is to say maybe there's some of them I actually like. They're just, you know, they're chidushim, but some of them are very compelling, such as, it depends if you're a posek or not. Meaning there's a difference. The average person who isn't making his own halachic decisions, it's not like he has a strong conviction that what he's doing is mutter and what they're doing is usser. Like, his rabbi said this, their rabbi said this, and you're all like, Shalom Yisrael. Like, I don't really care one way or the other, I just ask a shayla. But the posek himself has to stand by his position, right? So one possibility is to distinguish between people who make their halachic decisions themselves and people who don't.
Certain
poskim, right?
Will paskin certain things for certain people and certain things
for himself. No, but that's the point. The poskim himself. You have to believe, right? Okay. What you say.
Right.
Right? People who are relying on others to paskin. So when you say, I don't do this because I think it's usser, you're not saying, I say with conviction it's usser. You're saying, my rabbi said it's usser. His rabbi said it's mutter. You don't have a vested... It's not... Or to put it differently, it's intellectually dishonest for a posek to say, I think this is usser, but you be my Shabbos guy. It's not intellectually dishonest for someone who didn't make the decision himself to say, my rabbi said this, your rabbi said that. I have no opinion on the topic, so you do what you do, I'll do what I do, and Shalom al Yisrael. Right, I actually like that. There's something to that. A very similar distinction brought in postgame is maybe it's a difference between whether someone refrains from doing something mitaras vaday or mitaras safek. Right, I mean, even a postake. Some postim say, "Look, I'm very machmer myself, not because I'm convinced that it's usher, but because I'm machmer." Right. Sometimes postim say, "No, I think this is absolutely wrong." Right. So it could be that's the distinction. Right. If I think this is terrible, right? Everyone's making a big mistake, so put your money where your mouth is and don't eat the food that someone else prepared in a way you think is vade asr. If you say, look, I don't know if it's mutter or if it's asr, I'm not comfortable with it. So that's possible. The easiest way, I think, is just to say, we passing like the Gra, the Balei HaTosfos, in which case it's not a problem at all, because then it's mutter. But in the article, I went through like four or five other defenses of the Mishnah Berurah's position. I can send you the article afterwards. If you're interested, you can read it. Bein Tayyim. Yeah.
Can you use this for like the difference between us and Sfarad, like in terms of that?
So some people say
thing like Shkita, like
no. So some people say Ashkenaz and Sfarad. So some say Ashkenaz and Sfarad might be different in both directions, right? Ashkenaz and Sfarad might be better because it's each minhag is more legitimacy. It's a whole community that follows it. So you can't. It's not just like.
No, but can you?
It's not idiosyncratic positions.
Like a shkita, let's
say. No, so that's what. So some say it's. So it goes both ways. Some say Ashkenaz Sfarad is better because at least they're relying on not just their rabbi's position, but like a whole tradition of psak.
Right.
But it could also be worse because when you rely on your position, it's not just because I'm relying on my rabbi, it's because I'm relying on a whole tradition and I have to go against it, right? So it cuts both ways. So some say it's better, some say it's worse. What?
Well, yeah, it's exactly. Gebrach.
Don't get me started on Gebrachs. Oy, Gevalt. You know my opinion on Gebrachs. Like,
what would be the basis?
Eating certain cuts of meat that goes far as...
Oh, my God.
Well, what would be the basis
of... No, I know someone asked me, Shiloh, about this in L.A., is can he... There's a there's the Bukharin posek chef's non-glot meat. Can he eat it? I said, no. No, you can't. Like, you just can't, right? Like, this is an outlier position in America, right? If you're American, there's not an Ashkenaz Sephard thing. It's a minhag, right? I mean, I'm not saying the Bukharans are necessarily wrong in America to follow a minority position, but you know they're doing something which is not accepted by everybody else. I'm not saying it's treif, but I'm saying the minhag of Ashkenazim and most Sephardim in America is to only eat glot, whatever that means. Right? But still, enachinami, fine. But at this point, that's the reality, right? Like, if you can't say, I mean, someone can't say, I only eat glot, but I will go to the Bukharan restaurant, which I know is not glot, and eat it because they say it's okay. No, they're telling you their standard. Either you hold of it or you don't. Now, it may be a mistake that we got to this point. I have no horse in this race at all. I'm vegetarian. I don't care. Do whatever you want, right? Makes no difference in my life. But, my feeling is probably, you know, so again, that cuts both ways, right? Ashkenazi, Sephardi, Minhagim, assuming they exist. Assuming they exist, okay, fine, in brackets, come to Sunday share.
So here,
I can argue by the COR, all their chumas and kulas and so on, I have to know all that before I can eat their shrocha?
If you have strong positions against it, sure.
Well, I don't know if I have strong positions against them, but I don't know their positions.
Well, first figure out your positions, then email them. I don't know.
They're CR on the proper. How do I know what they're...
Because you abide by that old principle.
This is true of all of them. But, so
you can rely
on an old principle.
Okay, let's put it this way. Sam, this is why, if you have the time, right? I've mentioned it before, I think, but it's worth reading Timothy Litton's book called Kosher. Timothy Litton is an economist who wrote a book about the emergence of the kosher organizations. And in the 80s, the move towards towards unified standards across the kosher organizations, and this is what it was based on, is that realistically, he notes there, the reason he's not. I don't think he's Jewish at all. He's definitely not from. He said he originally started researching the kosher organizations with a lot of cynicism. But by the time he wrote the book, he lost the cynicism because he said he understands as an economist how the industry arose, because it's exactly this point. Is if you're going to trust each other, you need to be more machmir, or in English, you need to hold to standards that everyone can hold of. It's true in everything.
Yeah,
it's
more inclusive, which means
more machmir.
Right,
but it's not just true in halacha. This is true in health also.
Yeah,
right. It's true in health. My mother works in the Department of Health.
As well.
It's true in education. It's true in everything. Anytime you want to create a communal standards where you don't have to constantly be checking, the only way you can trust everybody is if you can trust them to hold to a standard that they might not think is necessary.
Well, there's a push right? The other way too, because if you want to apply a standard, cast a very wide net. In order to be accepted, sometimes you have to lower to the lowest common denominator.
Only if everyone's willing to accept it, though. That's the thing, is that in order to create community standards, I mean, usually community standards will go higher. Right? Accepted standards across the industry.
I'm asking, is that so? Because
usually.
There are people...
It's not just kashrus. That's true everywhere. That's the point. It's true in health. It's true... His point there, the reason he wrote the book, is he said there's a push in America towards privatizing supervision of certain things, right? Health standards, vegan standards, allergy standards, things like that. Because realistically, the government isn't always the best, right? Ethical worker treatment, right? All those things. Because the government might not always be able to do it. And he said Kashrus is actually the best model that currently exists of a relatively successful attempt at creating a non-government supervised internal trust system across industry. Right? And that's why he wrote the book. It's fascinating. I suggest it.
Where he analyzed why in Israel it doesn't apply.
So Toronto is actually part of this story, because Toronto is only monopoly internally, but they're part of both the MK and the COR, because of their international standing, have to deal with the same community. It's not true. The COR only has a monopoly on non-industrial kashrus in Toronto, but in terms of industrial kashrus, they compete right, you know, they'll tell you this. They said the CR functions at two levels. As a VOD, they have a monopoly. Right? As a industrial kashas organization, they don't, because they're functioning with the OU and the Starke and the Chafke and everybody else. Right? So they're part of this story just as much. That's why they're made it, right? There's the big four, right? Big five, rather. So the big five plus the CR and the MK, right? Because they're like they're not as big, but they're, you know, relatively local compared to the American ones. Anyways, if you want to see how this develops in fascinating ways, there are three books you can read. This is the shortest of the three, right? And the one written by a non-Jew who's totally an outsider, who's just analyzing it as an economist, which is fascinating. There's another one by Susan Fishkoff, which has a few chapters on this, but it's more narrative and there's other things in it. And there's another one called... There's one. This is called Kosher. Then there's Sue Fishkoff's, which is Kosher Nation. And then there's another one by some other guy, which is also fascinating, called Kosher USA. All of them, two of those are in the Vaughan Library in Bathurst Clark. The Kosher one is, for some reason, not in the Bathurst Clark system. But it is in the Toronto system, which is where I got it. I borrowed it. So Tully and Morris can take it out and lend it out when they're finished or something. Which is, I borrowed it from my in-laws.
Well, not to belabor the point, but that's the old Kahilas psychology.
Correct. They do. The VOD one.
Well, that's right.
Yes.
Whereas people like the Metziv and the others basically say your own rub in your own community.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
Huskins for your community.
Correct, but that doesn't else. Correct, but that doesn't work when you want to create international standards. That's it just doesn't work. Yeah. One, if you, it's very simple. If you want international standards, right? I mean, someone called me today. He's a rabbi in Switzerland, and he said, "How do I figure out the extent to which I can trust a company who produces something in Greece about their ingredients?" I'm like, I don't know, right? I mean, I said you have to talk to someone in industrial kashrus, because it's not like industrial kashrus arose cynically,
right?
Realistically, if you want to trust kashrus across borders, you need to develop international standards. And once you're developing international standards, they're going to be more machmir. That's right. This is why, this is what Timothy Lisson, this was his point. I'm going on a tangent, but the point is, you don't have a choice, right? If you want to eat food from around the world and you want to create standards that work for everybody in the world, you don't have a choice. That's just how it is. Fascinating book. We went on a tangent, but if it convinces you to read the book, totally shafa. It's a great book. It's great. It has. Who would have thought a book on economics would have a haskama from Rabbi Ganak? It's godless. It's much godless. Okay, that took us off, but I have to get to Marev, so I'm going to have to end on time today.